Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. This is Lisa Anderson with you, letting you know that later for our inbox, we have a listener who wants to know, is it okay to skip church sometimes? I mean, there are podcasts out there. There are sermons online. Does it really matter? I have some thoughts on the issue, and we'll weigh in on that. And then for our culture segment, taking care of your elderly parents. Maybe your parents aren't even elderly yet, or maybe they don't have any health challenges or anything. But what does that look like for your future? What's our responsibility as adults? Adult children of our parents in caring. What does the Bible say about that? Well, Michelle Howe is going to be here, and we're going to have a great discussion with her about that. Well, here we are for our roundtable. We're going to talk about some great things about being single, and stay tuned because next week we're going to talk about great things about being married. So we're really covering both sides of this. But hey, most of us listening here are single, and so we're going to celebrate being single today. And to do that, we've got Kyle, Christina, and Ryan with us. Hey, y'all.
Hello. Hey.
Great to have you. Okay, are we all single in here?
Yes.
We are. Okay. All the single ladies and guys. Okay. It's my song, edited version of the Beyonce song. Okay, well, we're going to talk about single, because I think a lot of people, or it's just assumed that if you're single, you're just sad and depressed about your life, and you're just hoping for what you don't have and stuff. And I don't think that's necessarily true. And I think it's very good and wise and possible to be hopeful for marriage if you want to get married someday, but also to just kind of rock out the season that you're in as well. And so hopefully we can have a good discussion about this. And so let's go ahead and just talk about, like, you know, where are you in your season of life right now? How are you feeling about, you know, where you are? And, you know, do you want to get married someday? And what does that look like as far as, I mean, not that we can have timelines and be all like, they will happen at this time and on this day. But just kind of where are you dispositionally right now with everything?
Yeah, so I'm about 2 years out of college and into my professional career. I always kind of figured that I would be married by this stage of life. My mom got married when she was 22. My dad was 23, had me when they were 24. So I kind of just thought that was normal. Didn't think I'd be at this point and still be single. But I have been single for about a year and a half now and have really been enjoying this season and just being able to grow in my relationship with God and find who I am in Him instead of in another person. So I would definitely like to be married someday, but at least right now, don't feel like I'm rushing towards that.
Hmm. So my name is Ryan. I've been single now for 5 years. I had a girlfriend, didn't work out. I've been really content, you know, just with going on with life. I was like, God, I just want to just serve you. I just want to be used by you. And I just said, God, like, I'm just going to focus on you. I was like, Lord, if you want to provide me with a wife, that'd be wonderful. But if you don't, you know, you're in control. I just got to trust you. Mm-hmm. And that's been like where I am right now, just in the season of just trusting God and just allowing Him just to use me where He wants me to be.
Okay. So you've been out of a relationship for 5 years, but you've never been married.
No, I've never been married.
Okay.
Yep. It's just.
Got it. So. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I've actually been in a relationship for 4 years. My girlfriend is pretty rad to love her. But it's just been, you know, a slow process of just trying to grow separately before we commit to each other and as a whole person. But in the meantime, I've been just going to school to get my degree in education.
Okay. Yeah. And you're pretty young too, right?
Yeah. 25.
Okay.
Kind of young.
Okay. Some people are like, that's not that young. Right? Mm-hmm. Okay, whatever. No, it's okay. We're okay with that, Kyle. And, most people know my story. I've been single my whole life, also expected to get married. And I pretty much feel like I went through different seasons of, like, you know, my 20s, I was just kind of oblivious and like, hey, whatever. And then, like, in my 30s, I got super desperate and weird and like, oh, my goodness, I'm on a timeline and stuff. And now I just feel much more chill about it and definitely see the pros and cons of both sides. And mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, just kind of like lean into where you are and see what God has. And so it's been a good spot to be in, I think. What do you guys think about singleness as far as, like, are there some seasons or, you know, times or events or whatever that are harder than others about being single, and how do you deal with those?
I would say that going to a Christian college, that was a harder time. because they definitely have the ring by spring stigma. If you were engaged by the time you graduated, people kind of wondered why. So that was a little bit weird. But now I'm at a church that's got a really great young adults group, a lot of people who are singles, not married. So I think that this season of life has actually been easier for me, which I didn't expect. Hmm. But having a community of people who are all in the same place and content with where they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, it's I'm just a sociable person, so I like, you know, spending time with people and, you know, being in that single time period of, like, not having someone to call up and say, hey, I'm super bored. You're really awesome. I want to hang out with you. Mm-hmm. I think that was what was hardest for me, was just knowing that, you know, I couldn't rely on this one person to, like, you know, come up and be there for me. Or, like, in hard times when I'm going through difficulties and, you know, my friends can't be there for me. Where's that godly woman that can step in, you know, jump in at any time, say, hey, like, you know, I'm here for you. Like, how can I help you? I think that's what was most difficult for me, is the loneliness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can definitely relate to the loneliness part. But for me, I was like, I guess it's weddings, because I was like, at my age, you know, above 30, a lot of people are married or getting married or posting all of, like, their pictures on Facebook. And it's just like, Lord, are you ever going to do that? But then it starts focusing on myself rather than on him. And that's when I start to get a little upset, you know, just be like, man, like, I don't think God's ever going to do this. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, God's just like, you just follow me and trust me. Like, I got you. Don't worry about everything else. Don't focus on them. Focus on me. And I'm like, okay, God, like, you got this, you know? So that's what brings me back, is just keep trusting in God and trusting in what he has planned for us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I've been finding my peace in and everything like that. Like, yeah, hard times come, but God's always going to be there through everything. So yeah, it's been really cool.
Mm-hmm. It's weird how, because, like, when I go to weddings and stuff, there are still enough single people among my friends to not have it be super awkward. There's still, I never feel like I'm the only person there that everyone's just like, seriously, are you ever going to get married? But it is weird, like, moving through different seasons of life. Like, for example, you know, and Ryan, I'm guessing you would maybe be here too in light of the fact that you work a lot with crew.
Yeah.
So now you have all these, like, college students, and then, like, they start getting married, and then you're like, am I, like, someone's grandpa? I mean, it's just, you just kind of feel like, yeah, all of a sudden you realize as you move into a different decade, you're like, whoa, what's that about? And stuff, and it does seem weird, but I've never had weird, I've never been sad around, like, Valentine's Day or Christmas. It's like the holidays don't affect me too much. I feel like I'm mostly with family, or I have enough friends that I feel like I'm not kind of alone in that boat, I would say. I don't know. I mean, how do you guys feel about that?
I feel like, at least from what I've heard from my married friends, holidays are actually easier as a single person,
mm-hmm,
because you don't have to balance in-laws and two different families.
Right.
I know that pretty much every holiday I get to be with my family, and that's been really special.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good point, too. That's,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, buying, like, 4 gifts instead of, like, 20 gifts for the whole family.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's talk about, like, what are some of the uniquely great things about being in a single season? Like, what would you say is just, like, super great?
Well, you have a lot of time to do the things that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to. I was talking to a friend of mine, and I said, like, what are, you know, because he's married, and I'm like, I'm not. So I need to know both sides, be able to answer this hopefully accurately, you know. And I was, you know, and he was saying, when I was single, time was a big thing. And I'm like, I totally understand. I was like, if I want to say, hey, I'm going to go on a mission trip, I just do it. I don't have to go explain to my wife, hey, you know, can I, like, leave for 2 weeks, you know,
mm-hmm,
or, like, hey, do you want to come along and we can go share the gospel together? Instead, I'm just like, you know what? I feel God's calling me to go do this. I'm just going to go do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to ask for permission. I don't have to do any of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, you know, Lord, I feel that you're calling me to go do this, and I'm going to just step out in faith and just go do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really cool. Like, I've had a lot of time to just say, okay, like, I can be invested in the college students. As you mentioned, I'm involved with crew as well. So I can be invested in, like, in them. I can give my time to other things that I couldn't do when I am married. So
mm-hmm,
I think a big one for me would be, I just have the flexibility to do a lot of different things.
Yeah. Yeah. Flexibility is so huge. I know you know, just thinking of one example, if I go on a work trip or whatever, like, one time I had a work trip scheduled, and one of my really good friends here in town was like, hey, I've got some time off coming up. Why don't I just, like, come with you? It just happened to be, like, a really cool destination. So I'm like, yeah, you just buy your ticket and whatever. And she did. And she just, like, hung out and did all these fun things while I was working and stuff. And it was just kind of like, I'm like, she could do that because she was single. And then it was fun because I had a travel companion, and it just kind of made it neat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a good idea.
I think it's also a good time for growth period, like spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally, like all of that. Before I got into my relationship, I prayed to God. I was like, you know, I'm going to use this season to effectively grow my relationship with you. Because, you know, if I'm going to be this, the man in the relationship, in this godly relationship that I'm supposed to have, or, you know, that he wants me to have, then I need to be in the right place and I need to be in the right mindset. And she needs to be in the right mindset. You know, I always get this, you know, thought process that, you know, God is building us up in our relationship. And then once we are, you know, able to caretake for each other and for ourselves, then he will bring us together. And so it's just a whole mending process, I believe.
Yeah, it's interesting because Adam Holtz, who's one of our writers at Focus on the Family for Plugged In, was single into his 30s. And he often says, like, the one thing I didn't realize after getting married and having kids, especially, is how much, like, he used to just go, like, go into the mountains and spend a day, like, reading and journaling. Or he could sign up for whatever conference he wanted to and go to that, or do, you know, go listen to super awesome preachers and stuff. And just the ability to pour into yourself spiritually and, you know, even just functionally, like just growing as an adult and learning new skills and stuff. It's a great time to invest. That's a good point.
I think singleness has also been really great for me with friendships. Right now I get to live with a couple of other really great young women. And it's been really nice to invest in that and to kind of walk through the same season of life together. Whereas when you're married, hopefully your spouse is your best friend and that's great. But your relationships with your friends look a little bit different because there's somebody else who's your main priority all of the time.
What would you guys say to that? Because I think that is a good point that so many, I think, single adults miss out on, is really intentionally building friendships and going after that. You know, one of the biggest questions we get at Boundless is, how do I make friends and how do I go deeper in friendship? Like friendships that really count instead of just these, oh, yeah, we happen to be at the same party at the same time kind of stuff. What does it look like for you to really cultivate good friendships that makes relationship meaningful in your life at this time? How do you do that?
That was something I really struggled with for about the first year out of college. I was used to living on campus and having built-in friendships in class and living around me. And then being out on my own, wasn't really sure where to find that. My roommate and I are both very introverted, so it was hard for us to go out and meet people. We tried to join a Bible study, just didn't connect well. So we actually ended up starting a Bible study of our own, which was a huge step for two introverts with a tiny little apartment. But it worked out really well. And that's where we've built some really great friendships and found people who are just intentional in this season of life.
Yeah, that's great.
I think church is a huge factor. Just like, you know, it's just, you have such a huge network, especially like here in Colorado, like, you know, or just small but big towns, you just, you know, one person and you know 20 other people. So you just get in these communities where people just hang out a lot. And then, like you said, in the Bible studies and in church, and then that's how you network and you connect with these people. And then once you get in a relationship, you connect with that significant other's friends, and then you broaden your horizons with that, and then it grows deeper as you move on with life.
Well, I moved out here from New Jersey, so it's been like I had to start all over. I had no family, I had no friends, I had like nothing out here when I came out here. So the first thing I did was I was like, I need to make friends. So I went and I found a church, but it was really hard to find an age group for my age group. There's post-college, and then what do you do when you're not in your 20s anymore? Because no church really has anything for their 30s and singles. It's always like 30 and married, or, you know, 20 and 30s that are married. And it's just like there's nothing really for the singles. So I also went online and I found a meetup group, and I joined a meetup group, and I was like, well, these people probably may not know the Lord, but at least I can be an influence, hopefully, in their lives, and I'll get to meet some cool people. And through that, I was able to meet a lot of really awesome people. We got to hang out every Saturday and sometimes on Wednesdays. So it was just really cool to meet them. And then eventually I did find a church that I liked, and I started going there, and now we do movie nights every Sunday night, and it's more than just a Bible study. It's more than just, you know, hey, I'm going to see you on this day, you know, during the week. We can be like, hey, you know, what are you doing today? You know, and because we're single, we can be like, hey, yeah, you want to come over? I'm just going to be watching TV, or I'm just going to be like, you know, playing video games or something like that. So it's been really cool just to be able to see like that there are many different avenues that you can go to make friends. And I thought that was really cool. And it was also a really far stretch because, like, I've never done that before, where mm-hmm. it's just like, I have to go find friends. You know, they used to be brought to me in the church, but now that I'm out here all by myself, I have to start over from the beginning.
Yeah. So. That's a good point too, because I feel like, I mean, this has definitely been the case with like my older family members and stuff. There's this assumption that like, just because you're single, you know, sometimes people perceive you as immature or like your life hasn't started or whatever. And I think it's a great opportunity for us to kind of break that stereotype, because especially when we can step in and be the inviters and be the server, you know, like, again, you know, you have your apartment, let's start a Bible study, or let's host something, or I'm just going to be doing, you know, I'm going to make something for dinner. Why don't I call up a couple people and have mm-hmm. them over, instead of always being the one who, you know, feeds the stereotypes of, oh, they're single people, they can't even cook food and they don't know how to do any life skills or whatever. So, you know, and I think to that point, I think you've got to have single friends, because you got to have your tribe and the people mm-hmm. who know you and who are in the same stage of life. But also, I'm not above like forcing myself on some married people too, you know, just kind of getting into their lives and being like, hey, what are y'all up to, you know, or can I tag along to XYZ or something. And I think that's worked well for me as well. So okay, what about, again, we talked a little bit about being single and just having good relationships. What does that look like as far as you know, being single, but still kind of being open to dating, being open to marriage? How can you be open to that and be open-handed and stuff without being like, oh yeah, I've got to have a relationship or I've got to get married to complete myself?
I mean, it's hard because, you know, society's made that the norm, you know, that you have to have this happy family, which, you know, it's a good norm. I'm not saying it's totally wrong in that, but, you know, Paul says in the Bible that, you know, singleness isn't a bad idea. It's not a bad thing. So it's like a double-edged sword in a way, you know. If God calls you to be single, then there's, you know, there's joy in that. But if he calls you to be married, then there's joy in that as well. I mean, I think you just have to, it just all comes down to, like, you know, falling on God and just, like, resting with, you know, the fact that, you know, maybe there is somebody out there for me, maybe there isn't. But either way, it draws you closer to God. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite Bible verses is Psalm 37:4. And I used to look at that verse and think of it as, oh, well, if I draw near to the Lord, he'll give me what I want. He'll give me a good job. He'll give me a husband. He'll give me cute kids. But I've kind of found that instead, what it means is that as I draw near to the Lord, he'll change my desires to match his. So in this season of singleness, as I've been able to just focus on my relationship with God, he's shifted my desires. And so I still desire a husband, but what I desire even more than that is God. And I only desire a husband because I want to love him the way that God loves him, and I want to be able to pursue God together.
Mm-hmm. What, you know, this is kind of I kind of want to put this question out there because I think it's kind of a weird elephant in the room kind of thing too. But I think especially for single adults, there is so much in the way that we are called to live that is countercultural. So related to sexuality and choices. I mean, clearly we're in circles of people where it's just like hooking up is the norm. I mean, everything you see it on, you know, TV and movies, stuff like that, the expectation of how we live our life. How do you guys go about bucking that trend personally and living that out in your own day-to-day lives?
I mean, like I said, it's hard because you want to be part of the norm, you know? But, you know, the Bible's just very explicit on, you know, being countercultural and just living your life above reproach and living in a way that, you know, is fitting and holy. But it's just becoming, you know, there's just these different norms of relationships and these different, you know, it's becoming natural instead of us taking a biblical stance on it. We're just, you know, accepting things. We're just going with the flow. And it's just confusing as a society because we just don't know what's true and what's false anymore. Most people don't. When, you know, matter of factly, like, it's just, you know, it's in the Bible. I know this is the most cliche, churchy, like, church boy thing to say, but, you know, like, in the Bible, like, there's so many, like, rules and principles on relationships, and it's very explicit because, you know, it's a very, we're very relational people, and we want to have that physicality and that emotionality with people. And that's because we were built that way, but sometimes it can just turn into a negative aspect as well. So I think we just need to, like, just sit back and just realize, you know, whether we believe or not, like, just sit back and think, you know, is this healthy for me? Is this healthy for my significant other? Is this healthy for this random person, you know, that I might be hooking up with? What are the consequences of this? You know, just it there's a lot, so many consequences and perks to any relationships that we have or anything that we do in life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a verse that came to my mind as you asked that question. It says, a man plans his ways, but God directs his steps. You know, so it's just like, I was just thinking like, well, yeah, like it's difficult when those times come. But you also need to know that you're not in control. It's really easy to just let the stress go when you know that you're not the one who's making all the calls here in life. You think you are, but you're really not. Like, God's putting steps in your path. And you're just taking each step as he puts the new one down. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool when I started to like learn that, because I'm like, why am I worried? Like, there's no reason to be worried. Like, God is literally in control. He's, you know, he has each step of the way. Mm-hmm. And there was also another really cool analogy that Jesus said, or that he was referring back to, which is where it was, I think it was Psalms 23. I might be wrong, but it says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. You know, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He's guiding me beside still waters. He restores my soul for his name's sake. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just really cool because it's just like, all you need to do is be still. Like in Exodus 14:14, it says, be still, I will fight for you. All I ask you to do is just be still. Mm-hmm. So I think that was just really, really cool. Like the more and more I learn about God's character and God's nature, the less and less I worry about the things of this world, because mm-hmm. there's always verses flowing through my mind, always things that just come to mind, like, oh yeah, you did do that, God. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, that was amazing. And once I start thinking about what he did and all the things that he has done, mm-hmm. like, I'm just like, wow. Like, I forget about everything else and mm-hmm. just was like, wow, you're amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just so awesome just to just sit there in God's presence. Yeah. And I think it's just really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, I would say that a lot of it comes down to trust and just believing that God is good, and that because he is good, what he says really is the best way. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always make sense. We look at the world, and I'll look at some of my friends, and it seems like they're having a great time with their boyfriends, and they move in together, and it all seems to be going well. And of course, I don't wish anything bad on them, but trusting that that's not what God has called us to, and that if I'm faithful, he will be faithful back in that, and he will be good.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I think just practically, too, I mean, the way I've seen this play out, in fact, just a recent example was my nephew was dating a girl who wasn't a Christian. And I think it was just she was a great person. And so I think, you know, it's not like, oh, my gosh, they're not a Christian. They're just evil. Like she was just really great. But I think it was only because of the fact that he had shored himself up with so many great guy Christian friends who were they were in his small group and whatever. And it was I mean, he'll say this. It was only because of them that he broke up with her mm-hmm. and their influence on him and their kind of counsel to him of like, you know, dude, hey, this is, you know, this could only go. You're going to be pulling in different directions. And is this really where you want if you project your life out to where you are and stuff? And I think not that we're not obviously we're in the world. We're going to, you know, come up against all these messages. We're going to see other people doing different things. And it's OK to be different. And I think if you you know, have kind of your tribe, your posse that, you know, is walking in step with you and is going to encourage you along the way, then, yeah, when you go to work, you're probably going to get an onslaught of crazy, or you're going to have coworkers, you know, pressuring you, or again, you know, just other friendships and stuff like that. And I think we got to be careful, you know, even to Ryan's point, to be one, infusing ourselves with God's word all the time and knowing, you know, what his truth is, trusting, you know, to Christina's point, like trusting God that he really does have our back and he has our future and mm-hmm. he knows what's best for us. And ultimately, we're going to be, you know, spending eternity with him. And so that's going to kind of switch out everything we know here and he'll make it okay in the end. And so I think having that foresight and knowing that, you know, is really cool, is going to be encouragement. So, well, you guys, thanks so much for weighing in with your stories. I think this is encouraging. And
thank you.
You know, hey, mm-hmm. there's those of you listening, there's four of us here who are single, and not that we don't date or haven't dated or whatever, but where we are right now, I always say this, I've said it on the show before, the one thing I know is that today I'm single, and that's what God has called me to walk out and be faithful in and trust him in and know that he's both sovereign and he's good and he's got great things for us. So thanks for showing that.
Thank you.
Thanks. You make me so mad, I want to throw a stone. You make me so sad, I want to hide away alone. Can you meet me in the middle where the light don't shine? We don't think the same, no, we don't see eye to eye. We're so quick to blame, we don't even realize that we can meet in the middle where there are no signs. Meet me in the middle where the light don't shine, where the bullets fly, where there are no signs. Can you meet me in the middle and we can try to find another way?
Well, hey, everyone. As we open up our culture segment today, I'm going to introduce you to Michelle Howe, and she is many things. In fact, earlier today, I was telling her, man, like, how many books have you written and, like, on how many different topics? Because it's, like, forever. But the one we're going to talk about today is very near and dear to my heart because you all know my story about my mom and caring for my mom. And her book is titled Caring for Our Aging Parents, Lessons in Love, Loss, and Letting Go. And I've often said, you know, oh, y'all, you know, you're like in your 20s and 30s. You're not having to deal with this. But one, some of you are because you have lost or are losing parents to cancer, to illness, to accidents, whatever. And two, you're in this space because maybe your grandma or grandpa is walking through end of life stuff and you're trying to help support your parents. And so, Michelle, thanks for being here and sharing some of your wisdom today.
Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to talking about this.
Well, this is cool. And you and I had the opportunity to tape for the Focus on the Family daily program today. We were both guests on that, sharing our experiences. And so I was like, yeah, we need to talk about this on Boundless, too, and tap into the stories that you have, which are super helpful. So, well, give us a little bit of an overview of what your caregiving experience was, because I think you and I had established that it's not like you plan, like, you know, your entire life to say, oh, yeah, someday I'm going to be a caregiver and I'm going to just have all my ducks in a row and be ready for it. And it just kind of happens to most people when we least expect it. So tell us a little bit about how you had to walk through it.
Well, we had four kids and they were teenagers at the time when our elderly neighbor cousin slash substitute grandpa got really sick at age 70, and he had cancer and he had open heart surgery and Parkinson's and diabetes and many other things over a 5-year period. And he was a lifelong bachelor. He was an only child. He never had children. All of his relatives were gone. So we were like it for family and we were second cousins. So we just stepped up and tried to help take care of him, doctor's appointments. We took care of his dog, his bills, his house, his yard. I'd run and get his medicines. Anything he needed, we were there for him. But because I was parenting four teenagers and my husband is a teacher and a coach, we had very little reserve during that time, and we didn't have any idea what we were getting ourselves into.
Yeah. Well, and it's so, I mean, I'd even like to pause just for a second here, because I think so many in our audience are thinking, okay, so that was his story. And honestly, that could be my story someday. Mm-hmm. You said he was a bachelor. He didn't have children. And I know that's a big fear. I've talked about my fear of that on the show of just like, I'm single with no children. What's my future going to be like? Is anyone going to be there to care for me? And so one, I think it's super encouraging to know that you were probably the answer to his prayers. I mean, otherwise he would have had no one. And to think that you were his neighbors, you were his even extended family, and God put it on your heart to step in. So I think that's a huge, huge answer to prayer in that. But you will say, for example, that you know, I think you say you didn't do everything perfectly, you know, by any means, because you were juggling a lot of different things at that time.
Right. You know, I always say, you know, you learn by doing. Mm-hmm. You gain experience and wisdom by going through the tough trials. And we had plenty of those. And we made so many mistakes early on, not because we didn't care. We did. We loved him. We did our level best. But we were just not aware of the toll it was going to take for me on my marriage for a while, on our kids. And we weren't able to give him probably everything he needed because we were juggling so much. Little did we know that we should have tried to enlist his friends. He didn't have family, but he had a lot of friends. Mm-hmm. But we didn't. We didn't think about it. Mm. Or that there's all these professional organizations who do lovely work, and they're available, and it would have been covered by his insurance, and we didn't know that. Mm-hmm. You know, we needed to talk to a social worker early on. If we had known that, the experience would have been a lot smoother for him and for us.
Yeah. Well, let's back up a second and talk about that, because again, you know, here our audience, a lot of young adults who this hasn't even crossed their minds yet. I mean, these are, you know, we've got folks listening here who have parents in their 40s. I mean, so they're just like, this is like forever off, you know, in the distance. But what would you say even now, because you're, you know, you have adult kids, and even as you're looking forward to, you know, you being the recipient possibly of some assistance in the future, what is the conversation that you would recommend to people, especially adult children with parents? What are some of the questions and conversations they should be having even now?
Well, I think you need to open the line of communication. And I know one thing I think we did do right in that first scenario of caregiving is we enlisted the help of our kids, which I talked about. And they were young, but we had them over there cleaning and cooking and helping. And yeah, it was uncomfortable at first. They didn't like to see Bill laying in a hospital bed, even though he was in his home hooked up to a few different tubes. They got over it quickly because we just said, he loves you. We love him. This is the right thing to do. And they stepped up. So they got some experience pretty early on. But I know so many people who, as you said, it may not be your parents going to be going through that, but surely I bet older aunts and uncles, older cousins, grandparents are elderly and infirm. Maybe they're in a nursing home. You know, as young adults, I would like to just say, take some time with them, have some conversations with them, and realize just because their bodies have stopped functioning and maybe even their minds aren't what they used to be, they're still alive and well on the inside and they need you. Mm-hmm. And your impact in their life, if you only visit them once every other week just for a conversation, will do a remarkable, you know, it would just be a great gift you can give them.
Yeah.
You know, but I think you have to talk about the future. And I think it's good. We've talked about it with our kids. What will happen when we get older? And of course, they all say, we'll never let you go to a nursing home. And I'm like, well, that's pleasant to say, but you don't know. Mm-hmm. It all depends on where God takes us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think it's so important, too, especially for the young adult listening here, if they're thinking of how can I support my mom and dad as they're caring maybe for my grandma and grandpa, I think to really, you know, to really come up with something concrete so that it is something where your, you know, your parent can count on you. Maybe it is, you know, an afternoon on the weekend or something consistent where you say, you know, it's almost like you, I mean, you're going to love your grandparent too, but it's truly a way to love and serve your parents and be a support to them. You know, I have told our audience that I was super convicted in reading 1 Timothy 5 of that idea of like, it is the responsibility of the children and grandchildren. Hey, grandchildren, you're there too. To care for widows, for those in their family and stuff. And I just had to think to myself, yeah, okay, practically, what does that look like? And for me, it meant taking mom in when no one else would, and her money was running out and stuff. And it was literally the hardest thing I'd ever done. But I could see how God met me every step of the way. And it started with the mindset of, okay, if I'm going to commit to do this, then I'm going to need to pull in the resources and the people. I'm going to have to be willing to ask for help. I'm going to have to be willing to put my needs out there and not be all put together because I will not be in this process.
Right.
So.
Well, I think you have great suggestions, too, about the practical, like offer to take care of that elderly grandparent so your parents can go have a date night. You know, offer or make it a commitment that, Mom, I'm going to clean your house from now on every Saturday morning so you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Or I'll mow the grass, Dad, every week so you don't have to, you know, take tasks away from your parents so that they can rest a little. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just a lot of practical things and every situation is unique, but you know your own parents.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll be the one who is comfortable going into your grandparents' nursing home or into their home if they're ill and just spending half a day and being okay with that. And that's wonderful, too.
Yeah. And I even think, you know, there are a lot maybe who are listening who are saying, yeah, OK, but I don't even like live near this grandparent. I don't whatever. Wherever they are, calls, cards, I mean, any way of reaching out and letting them know that they're not forgotten is so big. I mean, it's just such an opportunity to be a part of their life and a part of their day and just brighten their day and, you know, remembering, not just remembering birthdays and Christmas and stuff, but just reaching out even on a consistent basis and saying, hey, I want to find out what you're up to and maybe update you on my life. I remember with my mom, I just felt like, she lived so vicariously through me, you know, she was always interested, like, what are you doing? What are you up to and stuff? And so it was a great way to stay connected even before she lived with me.
Well, if you have a smartphone, then you don't have an excuse. That's what I tell people, because you can FaceTime. And you know what? Older people, my parents do it with sometimes when I'm at their house with our grandkids, you know, and they don't have to understand the technology. But if you do, and you're a younger person, you are savvy and all that, you know, you just get that iPad out and let them see you. And you'll see such a difference in their demeanor and how encouraged. They may talk about it for days.
Yeah.
You know, set up a once a week that you talk to them for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, you can really make a huge impact.
Yeah. And even teaching them, like, what they need to know. Like, I mean, I have a lot of young adults that I've worked with who have kind of gone over, whether it's to an aunt and uncles or grandma and grandpas, and helped set them up on Facebook or showed them how to do this. So, like, okay, we can, you know, when you see on your phone, there's like a FaceTime call coming through, just hit this and we're going to talk. And, you know, they might just need a little training or a little prompting of how to go about doing that. So give us a little bit, because I want you to get in. You actually have two caregiving stories. Then now the second one with your father-in-law, I think it was. But let's talk, before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about, again, I think you and I have learned a lot of like what we didn't do on the front end. Adult children now. So even the conversations that can happen among siblings about when the time comes, how are we going to divvy up responsibility? How are we going to, if we can, play to everyone's strengths? How are we going to talk about finances, time? You know, who's going to take on the lion's share of, you know, power of attorney and that kind of stuff? What, you know, I mean, would you say that even this early in adulthood is a good time to start talking about that, involve, you know, someone's parents with them in the conversation? Or?
Oh, sure. I mean, my kids are ages, what, 27 to 33. And I know from my oldest daughters telling me they've already had conversations. So they're thinking way ahead. Now, maybe that's way, way ahead.
You're all offended. You're like, hey, what's happening here? Why are we already? Yeah. Okay.
But I think it's good because it just puts a seed in your heart and in your mind that that may happen eventually. And then when they share with me what they're talking about, I can, you know, intersperse some of my own thoughts like that doesn't really work. Now, let me tell you how that doesn't work. But that might work, you know, and you really kind of just talk through it. But it's all just a demonstration of love. How are you going to serve somebody when there's a need? And having the heart willingness and, like you said, the obedience to scripture to do it when it's in your face and you know that God is calling you to that job, you have to obey. But, you know, with, like you said, practically, boy, there's so much you can do ahead of time. It's like a game plan, you know, or it's like, you know, having a work project. Take it on like that.
Yeah. I think, too, something that was really helpful for me was realizing when I came into my season of caregiving that some things were going to have to go. I can't do it all. I can't be all that I was. And I remember making those decisions about, you know, ministries I was involved in church or things that I, you know, had committed to other friends, you know, to help out with and stuff. And I had to say, I'm just going to have to step back. And in this season, I need to devote my energies towards mom because she's going to need me pretty much full time, you know, when I'm not at work. And so I remember how there was a lot of grieving in that because I remember going to church and realizing where I used to just stand in the narthex with a cup of coffee and yak with people. Now it was like game on. I mean, I got to church and between getting mom's coat off, getting her to the bathroom, getting her to Sunday school, then we had to get to the bathroom again. Then we went into the service. Then it was just like moving pieces.
Yeah.
You know, I was not chit-chatting with anyone. And that was a real loss for me and kind of a sadness. But I always told myself, okay, Lisa, this is a season and this is, you're giving this up for a season and it is a sacrifice and it is hard. This isn't just all like, hey, happy, happy, fun time. But I knew that, you know, in the end it would be worth it. And I could look even in the moment, for the little fun things and the good memories too.
I just love the whole idea of telling yourself, this is my season. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had that a lot. You know, when I was rearing my children and I couldn't get into church because somebody was always crying or screaming or throwing a fit.
Throwing
up or blasting out of their diapers. You know, at every stage of life, it is a different season. And one of my closest friends, when I was struggling with some of the caregiving, because she'd already gone through it with her parents and they were both deceased, she said, it's a season. Mm-hmm. Just tell yourself, this is my season. We don't know how long it's going to last, but it's not forever.
Yeah.
And it just helped me. Yeah. It just helped me think, I can't do, like you said, all those things, or life is really different now, and I don't really like a lot of this. It's hard, but it's okay, and God will give me grace for today, but this is a season. And somehow that just made me feel better.
Yeah. Well, and it's weird how I feel like books are written and articles, and people say that a lot about parenting small kids, but they don't say, oh, yeah, that season actually comes around again when you care for the elderly or for
Absolutely.
The sick as well.
Yeah.
And we need to be okay with that. All right. Tell us about the story of entering caregiving the second time and kind of what you learned the second time around and how you were able to really be intentional about the way you approached it.
Well, the sad irony is that we were at a funeral for my husband's grandfather when my father-in-law told us he had esophageal cancer. Mm. So here you are, grieving over the loss of one man on the same day that you're potentially grieving over the imminent loss of another person you really love. Hmm. And they just intersected. And I still had a lot of baggage, I'll call it, or maybe just unresolved feelings about the first time we had gone through caregiving with Bill some years earlier. And I just remember praying and asking the Lord just to help us. So I had a conversation with my husband, and I remember just saying, we've got to do this differently this time. And we did. And it was way better. I never felt guilt and conflict or frustration that I was being asked too much of. And I just, the experience was so different. But I was intentional about, both of us were intentional about bringing in the people we know that would help us do the caregiving. Mm-hmm. So we had a circle of family. That made all the difference in the world. Mm-hmm. And we were more seasoned. We finally could tap into all the medical, you know, the nursing staffs, the mm-hmm. people who could clean, anything that we could use, we did mm-hmm. so that we had more quality time with my father-in-law.
Yeah, that's great. And it's almost like, now, did you have to have, and because, you know, the closer family relationship, did you have to have the conversation about, or did he volunteer information about healthcare and finances and just what he was expecting from you? Or
yes, and you know what? He had that conversation with my husband, who was his son, and mm-hmm. he also had another son and a daughter, and they all talked about it. He was very upfront about it. Okay. I think he had it all set up. Hmm. You know, he had been sick for a while, and he knew it, and he didn't tell anybody.
Okay.
So
mm-hmm.
I think he felt like that was his probably gift to his children, hmm. that they would not have to deal with that. And my husband took over. But it was wonderful for us to know exactly where we were at.
Yeah.
Because finances becomes an issue quickly for people who are just trying to help. And then all of a sudden the helping becomes not just one time a week visit, but five.
Yeah.
And then you're buying somebody's groceries. And then you're paying for the meds because they forgot to give you a check. Or their credit card got canceled. I mean, it can become a nightmare financially for caregivers unless they're proactive.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing we've established and talked about and even earlier did is the fact that, you know, with healthcare today and with, you know, advances in medicine and stuff, people are living longer. And it's not just like back in the pioneer days where you just got something and something took you out mm-hmm. and you didn't know. You were probably like 60. But it really is. So I think this is going to be a reality for most of us, you know, for ourselves as well as for those that we love who are mm-hmm. in an older generation. This will become our reality. But let's talk about now, Michelle, a little bit, just ways that young adults like 20-somethings, 30-somethings, those listening, can really start pouring into the lives of others, whether it is older family members, whether it's someone in your church. I know people are like, well, you know, your mom's just been gone a year and I already have a couple other elderly friends now who I'm mm-hmm. in their life. Now, they don't have the dementia challenges that mom has. They're both very sharp, but they're both pretty frail. And so I help them with a lot of practical things mm-hmm. and then just hanging out with them. I mean, they're so cute because they're just like, we are always around old people. Can you just hang out with us? And it's just so cute, you know, to be there. Just a little, they're both sharp and stuff. And so it's really fun. So I just enjoy doing that. But what would you say from your experience or some other great ways that people can be a support?
Well, you know, one thing is I would talk to my parents and just pick their brain about what they need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd say, what's your need? If I could do one thing for you, Mom, if I could do one thing for you, Dad, to help you,
mm-hmm.
or what do you see? Do you think my heart's tender toward Grandma and Grandpa? Do you think what should I be thinking and feeling? I mean, talk to them
yeah.
and talk to people who are just a little older than yourself, that maybe you have a friend who is really good with older people.
Yeah.
You know, pick their brain. Go when they go to a nursing home to work on a Saturday or volunteer, mm-hmm. go with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just see if you can find your niche in that area.
Yeah.
You know, find what maybe God is calling you and you don't even know it yet.
Yep.
You know, that kind of thing. And just be open. I would think, you know, to tell young people is life goes so fast.
Mm-hmm.
That when you're young, you feel invincible and you think nothing like that will ever happen to me. It won't happen to my parents. But boy, in my experience, I mean, people in their 50s are dying of strokes left and right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't know how much time you have. So use it wisely and,
yeah.
and one day at a time, ask the Lord, what would you have me do today? And just see what he says.
I think it's so interesting because one of the things with my two little elderly friends now, it's so easy to think when you're able-bodied, you don't even anticipate like what some of the struggles are for older
mm-hmm.
folks. So like one of the ladies, when Christmas came, she really wanted help getting her Christmas decorations up, which I would just think, you know, oh, you just pull stuff out of a box and put it up. But
right.
for her, like she can't get up on a step mm-hmm. ladder to hang stuff or to pull down heavy boxes from mm-hmm. her attic and stuff. And I was like, oh my word, that is something that I can so easily help with. We can
right.
chat while we're doing it. She's mm-hmm. going to give me the story on every single little thing that she wants to put up in her apartment. It's going to be really fun. And we did just that.
Uh-huh.
And it was so cool. My other little friend is very physically frail. And I just realized one day that she needed her kitchen floor scrubbed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that she just can't physically get down there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so something that I could help out with, you know. And
right.
again, I think we so often misinterpret like this idea that we have to have all these amazing skills and be all like, you know, some kind of medically trained
mm-hmm.
or elder care specialist. And it's really not. It's just relationship.
It is. I always like to think of it as you're just doing life with people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you as a young person has to go clean your apartment today.
Yeah.
Well, an older person has to clean their apartment, too.
Right.
But
right.
you have the stamina and the energy and the wherewithal, whereas they don't, just like you helped.
Right.
And it's like looking at your life and imagining what, if you were disabled, you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And in a way, elderly people are disabled.
Yeah.
They don't have the strength or the energy anymore.
Yeah.
And they might be disabled as well. You know, and you put yourself in that situation and say, wow, I would appreciate if somebody would come over and clean my bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that we've done, which is really funny. I mean, again, I want to, you know, stress too, you can do fun things too. You don't have to just only clean for people, but do that. But but one of my friends is like, she's all about Skip-Bo, the card game, which
yeah.
I think I played when I was 10. But now we're playing Skip-Bo again because she
yeah.
just loves it. And
mm-hmm.
so it's just kind of like, hey, we'll play some Skip-Bo. And then the other one is so cute because I have a relatively large TV with a couch that has like the electric like recline and
mm-hmm.
stuff. And she just one day was like, yeah, I think I'd like to come over to your place and maybe we can watch some Blue Bloods. And
oh!
so she just totally suggested it.
Yeah.
Comes over, is all like splayed out on my couch, which she put up, you know, put her feet up
yeah.
and she was just loving it. And I'm like, oh my word, this is so fun. We're just
right.
being little TV buddies, you know, with
yeah.
that. So, and it was just great.
That is an important point. And I think we get all heavy. But why not have fun with somebody you care about?
Yeah.
I mean, if they love coffee, bring them coffee or make yep. coffee with them. If they like a donut, bring them a donut. Take them to a donut shop.
Yeah.
Let them pick out five.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do something they really like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even hearing about, especially stuff, you know, that they remember from their childhoods or stuff,
mm.
you know, back when they were, you know, strong and competent and young. I mean, reminiscing, they just love to do that. Talking about, you know, how things used to be, or especially if you're, you know, they're living in the town that they lived in decades
right.
ago, they can kind of comparatively, you know, give you some insights on that. It's just really fun.
And I think with older people too, scrapbooks were big for them in their age.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If you ask an older person to open a scrapbook, I mean, I think there's a treasure trove in there of stories like you just said. But
mm-hmm.
if you're afraid you won't have enough to talk about with an older person, ask them to show you explain some of the pictures they have on their walls. Who is this?
Yep.
Where was that taken? You will find you don't have to say much because they're going to revisit some of the happiest, maybe hardest times of their life, but they'll be so glad that they have somebody listening to them.
Yeah, that's so true. So, well, this has been super cool. It just even gives me more ideas of things that I want to do with my little neighbor friends and stuff that we enjoy doing. And so much of it is stuff that we're already doing. Like just another idea I had was, you know, my little friends, when I know I'm going to Walmart or the grocery store, I'm like, do you want to come with me? Do you want me to pick you up stuff? You know, very easy on either end of it. Something I'm doing already. Invite your little elderly friends or other people that you know and love who can come along with you. There's just so many ideas. So
that's great.
Okay, well, folks, the book is Caring for Our Aging Parents, Lessons in Love, Loss, and Letting Go. We've been talking to Michelle Howe. We want to make this book available to you. So we have got copies of the book for a gift of any amount to Boundless. We're going to send you a copy of this book as our thank you to you. So you know you need it. You know you're going to be here. You know that you have that grandparent or that aunt or uncle or that little neighbor or church lady that you want to start pouring into their life. And so this is going to give you some great practical ways of doing it. For a gift of any amount to Boundless, we're going to get this book in your hands. So, Michelle, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. When the world needs a hero, can you be the hero? When the world needs a miracle, can you be the miracle? You be the miracle. Safe and sound inside of home. But when the world needs a change, can you make a little trouble? Can you make a little trouble?
Yeah, hey, make a little trouble. Gonna see it too. Believe in a love that makes all things new. Hey, make a little trouble. It's all good, I got you. Believe in a love that makes all things new. Hey, make a little trouble. I know it might exhaust you, but believe in a love that makes all things new. Hey, make a little trouble for something bigger than you. And believe in a love that makes all things new. Hey, when the world needs a
folks, as we close out the show, I am here with the inbox, and it's a question that I get to answer today. So I'm grateful to do that from a listener who asks, since I have access to services from my church's website plus podcasts, and I have fellowship with friends and a weekly small group, is it okay for me to skip church sometimes? And okay, so my answer to this is yes, it is, because this isn't about getting a gold star chart for church attendance, okay? So we're not, like, being weird about this in that sense. But I do want to give you a few guidelines, because I think here in your question, sometimes is key. I don't think that just podcasting and getting a bunch of shows, you know, online or whatever is okay as a substitute for church long term. And why do I think that? Because church is more than just getting good teaching or having friends, basically. So each of those independently in and of themselves is not just enough. Church, as we know, is meant for a number of different things that you can't get just from, you know, sitting online or doing what you're doing. You know, when you say you're skipping church, namely, church is for the public proclamation of Scripture. It is for corporate worship with a body of believers. It is for observance of and participation in the sacraments, being Holy Communion, being baptism, marriage, all those things. It is also being part of a disciplinary body and accountability that happens within the church. And speaking of body, it's just part of being a body. A body is a gaggle of folks who are fellow believers in Christ who truly operate as a family of believers. So it's not just your handpicked and cultivated small group crew. And so those are some things to keep in mind as you're considering, you know, what a church experience is and what you are going to get out of it, as well as what you're going to contribute. So podcast, book, small group, all of those are great and should totally be used in a supplementary
fashion. I totally believe in that. But being known and an active part of a local church body is very important on a regular basis. So my bigger question here for you is kind of like, okay, where is your heart in this? I mean, again, if this is like sleeping in on a Sunday, or you have something else going on, or family's in town, or you're, you know, not feeling well or whatever, again, this isn't about gold stars. This isn't about some do's and don'ts list. But this is just about, you know, really you want to love to go to church. You want to love to be part of a local body of believers and be part of that. You want to dive in and commit. You want to be missed. I mean, this is a group of people that you want to, you know, to have know and love you, and vice versa. And so your experience will be rich if you go about doing that. So if you're not plugged in, you know, make sure that that happens so that this truly does become a family to you, and it's somewhere that you want to be on Sundays. Not that you have to be every Sunday, but being part of a local church and one that is living and breathing and up in your face is ultimately the place to be. Well, I hope this has been helpful to you. As always, folks, we do want to hear from you here at The Boundless Show. Write to us at editor@boundless.org, and we will answer your question, hopefully, on a future show. And you can also look up previous questions and pass them along to your friends, because that's how they hear about the show. So until next week, I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org, focused on the family.